The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
I signed with the Rad Squad in 2011, that summer. You signed at the back of a smoke pack. Roddy, I would say, is like the Irish Harry.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Right, let's move on because David Nusafora gave an annual address, I think. Is it once a year? Is it twice a year, maybe? He does these roundtable press conferences, and you were at it, Owen. So we have an opportunity here to see some of the stuff. Are we going to explain what we're about to watch first, or are we going to watch first?
Like, I mean, I think it is. It's twice a year at this point, isn't it, Nusafora? And I think when we think about what Nusafora has used these press conferences for in the past, it is generally kind of like a State of the Union almost. He's kind of fronting up about everything. And yesterday was quite a lot to do with the financial situation of the IRFU. Things looking particularly bleak on that front. Things looking a little bit more positive when it comes to a potential a possibility of a full house later on this year in the Aviva Stadium. Quite often you get a situation where there is a World Cup disaster to pick through, or a Six Nations disaster to pick through, and sometimes heads roll or certain people are thrown under a bus. I think that there is a general acceptance of circumstance when it comes to some of the down moments in this year's Six Nations, but also the fact that Ireland won that last game against England, I think, changes the tone of these conversations completely. The tone of yesterday's conversation then kind of went on to a few other different things. The contractual situation at this time of the year, obviously, such a big thing, hoping to sign up Tadhg Furlong for a bit of a longer contract next year when the situation comes back up, and also talks about the fact that CJ Stander was not going to be moved on his decision. It was certainly not a financial decision, he put it yesterday, David Nusafora, which means that I would say the offer from the IRFU was a very generous one, and Stander obviously had his own situation that he wasn't going to continue to play. We were going to play a clip now where we get into the conversation around some of the players, I guess, lower down the pecking order when it comes to the national team, at least, who are going to be leaving these shores. James Cronin and Quinn Roux are a couple of the names mentioned in the question here. And Nusafora was asked if there was any scope to keep those sort of players within the Irish system.
Yeah, well, you know, at the same time, you know, I've just, rugby is a business too. And you get to a point where you've got to look at affordability, you've got to look at, sometimes you get to a point where you might have talent coming through and it's a decision that has to be made around, cost benefit. And that's the brutal truth of professional sport sometimes. And you've got to say, well, okay, we can't afford to pay that much, that amount of money for a particular player. We have X, Y, or Z coming through underneath that. They're going to be worth more over time. They've got longevity in the position, and we have to keep that churn in that particular position going. And they're just decisions that have to be made at times, and it's unfortunate because you're dealing obviously with people, but at the same time, it is a business, and you have to make business decisions as well as trying to look after them as people. And that's just the way that the professional sport works, unfortunately.
Thanks, David. David, just on that point that you made there, could I ask you about the Jason Jenkins move to Munster? Did you consider blocking that move, given the amount of homegrown players in that position and their prospects of game time obviously now being diminished by his arrival?
No, it's not a matter of blocking it. We speak with each of the provinces, and we sit down and we look at what the rationale is, and you judge every case individually on how it benefits the system and the teams. And with CJ leaving at very short notice, it disrupted their planning around what they needed going forward in the balance of their team. There are plans in place for how we intend bringing some of the younger players through and what sort of game time and exposure they get. And it was based around CJ being here, I suppose. When CJ left, We sat down and we discussed how we were going to deal with it. And we looked at a particular type of player that would be suitable to replace CJ. And we looked at the term, the tenure of that contract that would fit back into the model. And a one-year tenure was agreed between ourselves and Munster, and therefore they had to find someone who was suited what they needed and was happy to take a one-year deal. And that's how we came up with the decision that was made.
I think that sounds fair enough, right? It's like there's a hole here, we need to fix it. We're not going to fix it with somebody who's going to come in and take 3 or 4 years out. Maybe the young players are going to play a lot more next year than they would have done if CJ was there, but obviously CJ would have been away for those 10, 15 games a season and we would have managed his minutes. So it's a complicated cocktail when it comes to making sure that you've got cover and you still need to be able to reach a European semi-final / final.
And the sense that maybe the Munster pipeline isn't producing players the way it used to as well, and there are a couple of players in those positions who look ripe to actually have a big season next year, and maybe there was a sense that they'll be kind of pushed back a little bit. But I think that signing was confirmed before Stander confirmed his departure, if I'm not mistaken. So it's the tone is probably a little bit different to the way people look at it now, because the Stander thing obviously does change that pecking order quite considerably, with the exception, of course, of those games during the Six Nations. But there was no, as I mentioned, there was no sort of sense from the live section anyway, I know we're going to get into some of the embargoed stuff in a moment, but there was no sense from the live section that News 4 was out to be overly defensive yesterday about anything. I think there was a real acceptance that Irish rugby's in the situation that it's in, which isn't a grim one. I think that when it comes to the situation that's affected everybody, that they've done okay. And I mean, it's grim, but it's not like Ireland are doing worse than other rugby unions around the world. When it came to the performance of the national team, he kind of referred to this idea of a team dropping off a cliff, and he says that no team should ever be dropping off a cliff at any point, that you might have a slight downturn and then you build back up. So I think that was probably just a little bit of a mention of the form recently, that it has been a little bit of a downturn since 2018 from the national team, but the team will continue to build, and the fact that they haven't had two summer tours to build on or try and build back up, I should say, that's been a big deal, because he mentioned it a couple of times yesterday as well.
It's always worth taking a moment to consider the body of work that somebody in his role has put together over the period of time he's been here, because he's in the final year of the current contract, which is a 3-year deal, and before that it was a 5-year deal. So essentially this is year 7 of 8, is that correct?
Yeah. And yeah, it does seem that, like, the decision next year is going to be one that I'd say nobody kind of really knows at the moment, that it does look as if he's leaning outside of the job actually. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But that's 2022 is the end of his current deal for sure. And I know he spent some time back home in Australia, and maybe the pandemic changes things for everyone at this point. Like, when you go to the newspapers in this morning, who had embargoed stuff to publish, there was also the question around Ronan O'Gara. I'm not sure. The Irish Examiner this morning, their headline is "Courageous O'Gara could coach Ireland without coming home first," which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so I don't know if this was ever said, but it certainly was intimated in the past that you needed to be part of the coaching setup in Ireland before you would be considered as a candidate for the head coaching job. And, you know, if you look back traditionally, that would have been what would have happened, that somebody would have got the gig from within the Irish setup. This is interesting, because if it's... So what exactly is the quote about looking outside the system?
So News 4, does someone need to come home? No, there's always different ways of doing things. I'd be a great supporter of people going offshore and gaining new and different experiences. I think Ronan has been really courageous in the moves that he's made to go out there and try and develop himself as a coach. And I think it's a good thing for more of our coaches to do that and gain experience. May it be that he comes back through the provincial system? Maybe, but it's not a requirement. I think there are lots of different ways to get our coaches to develop, and coaching overseas in different environments is a healthy one.
First off, that's true, right? It is really good for many Irish coaches to get as much experience as possible, given that there aren't that many jobs within the Irish system and the Irish setup. And then the best thing is for them to go off and spread their wings and at some point if they want to come back. But equally, this opens up the possibility of pretty much anybody getting the Ireland job in the future, which, again, it leaves you more opportunity to get the right person for the job as opposed to being shoehorned into the specifics of the people who are available at the moment. Now, we have great coaches working in the provincial system at the moment, so it's not really an issue. Like, if the Leinster coaching ticket took the Ireland job, no one would bat an eyelid because of the quality of the work that they've done. And at various stages, if other people from the other provinces were to be part of that backroom team and to be in line for, or if ultimately what they're doing is they're working on Paul O'Connell for him to be an Ireland coach at some point in the future, again, that all makes perfect sense. But say Pat Lamb decided at some point that he wanted a crack at international rugby after he's achieved everything he possibly can in the English club game. Because he knows Ireland, has a connection with Ireland, are we saying, no, you can't take the job? Yusuf Orr has opened the door, not just for O'Gara, but for Pat Lamb and for people like that too, which seems like a wise thing to do to me. It seems like a progressive moment here. And I have never seen it written down in cold black and white, you need to be working in the provincial system. Maybe it was. It was certainly the impression that we had. And I think that's like a significant shift. Now, if you're a player reading that saying, I think it's good for you to go off and have experience offshore and learn new things, you're like, well, you don't mean for me though, do you? Mm. I mean, Tadhg Furlong's not reading that going, that's interesting. Does that apply to me?
Can I
have a year earning $1 million, 2 years earning $1 million and still playing the World Cup? How does that sound? Would that work?
Like, what's interesting there that you mentioned that now is about the pathway for coaches in Ireland. One of the things that he mentioned in his opening address yesterday is that Matt Wilkie is gone from the IRFU. So he would have been, I'm going to get his correct title, IRFU Head of Coach Development. So he's left the role, and I presume that they're looking for somebody to step up to that. So development of coaches is something that Yusuf Orr said has been affected over the last little while, and they are, I guess, maybe at the mercy of the provinces, essentially putting in a body of work that suggests that they're being run by the right people on a coaching level and that those coaches then are ripe for picking by the IRFU. And I guess that's a fair enough system, because that's the only level that you're going to get outside of Test Rugby that closely resembles Test Rugby, which is Pro 14 and Champions Cup Rugby. So that's probably the system at the moment that works the best. But there is this legend of the game who is doing great things away from Ireland at the moment, and if there is an unwritten rule that you have to come up through the ranks, then you can see why they would make an exception if it were to come to that.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense as well. The other thing is that, like, on balance, there's two things here. There's the issues that you might have with what Yusuf Orr has done, and there's clearly, and it's fine to have those issues, and everybody should excavate them. And you know, the relationship with the team, you know, how much of a hands-on role does he have, and like what's that relationship like with the coaches, and then the hard and fast rule on whether or not players are allowed to go and why the exception was made for Sexton and all that kind of stuff. And the club game, I know, is a constant stick that people bring up to kind of say, well, why is he not fixing the problems with the club game? But you've got to also bear in mind that if he wasn't there, what was there beforehand, and just how chaotic a lot of this decision making was that was going on before there was somebody whose job it was to manage the ebb and flow of the contractual situation. And you know, we don't know what life would have been like if they'd had a different character there instead of him. But on balance, you would say that most of the stuff, I think loads of the decisions they've made over the years have been wrong, but on balance, you would say that Irish rugby is better for having somebody in that role, and he's doing a reasonable job in that role.
It's interesting when you kind of think about what is the job spec. Like, the club game dying on the vine has been a massive failure within Irish rugby. I'm not sure, is that the failure of a certain individual, or is that the failure of Irish rugby itself to allow it to die? And even if using the word allow is actually unfair, maybe this was just a natural reaction to raging professionalism in rugby and the national team becoming the clear product that everything was geared towards within Irish rugby, that the provinces became their own different behemoths all around the country, that maybe the club game dying was just going to be a natural reaction, but it still happened, and there will still be questions asked of people at the top of the IRFU as to how that happened and what efforts are being made to resurrect that. And it does seem that it's been a conversation that's been happening for quite a long time, and there isn't any more clarity as to how the club game will get any more relevant, and maybe that just doesn't happen in the short-term future. The same goes for the women's game. Yusuf Orr listed off a lot of nice-sounding initiatives that are happening with the women's game yesterday. He's definitely of the opinion that grassroots work needs to be done before we even entertain the idea of professional rugby. He seems pretty clear in that, in fairness. And I think when somebody's got a clear idea of what they're doing and they go ahead and do it, that's fine. But I think that personally, I maybe would disagree with that a little bit, that actually having a professional model in the short term may actually encourage the grassroots level as well. Now, of course, we're looking at an organisation who has had two massive years of incurring massive debt. So maybe actually starting up a new professional system is just not a runner right now. And that's the truth to why this isn't happening in the short term. But if that wasn't as much of an issue as maybe it could be, then I do think that the sooner the better. Or even a timeline of when Irish rugby wants to see professional rugby brought in the women's game might be good, because at least if you're a younger player, you'd be like, all right, I'll get a few years at the end of my career where I'm, you know, getting paid to do this thing.
Yeah. All right. 18 minutes past 8 this morning here on OTB AM.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.